Cell Journalism. My name is Michael O'Connell. I'm here again today with Amber Healy, who is going to be soon an editor at the Sandusky Register. Is
That's
that right?
It.
I'm here today with Aram Zucker Scharf, and he's a digital journalist and a marketer in New York City. Is that correct? Is that the best way I should refer to you, or sort of?
Content strategist and digital journalist is probably better. It's marketing is a little general for what it is that I do, but it's up to you.
Okay, no, that's great. No, you should be able to define who you are and what your position is and everything. We got into a conversation on Facebook, and so from that, I decided, why don't I invite you in, and we're sort of talk through things. So you started the conversation, and I you know, blundered in and made my stupid comments, and we sort of got off track. What was the start of that conversation? What were you sort of talking about?
The start of the conversation was really about why newsrooms are still separating digital journalism roles as separate roles, especially on the editorial level. So the conversation was that, why are we doing that? Right. Technically, if we're all supposed to be going digital first, if we're supposed to be doing everything electronically now, if the web is integrated into our workflow at every level, why separate out digital editors as their own role? So my argument was that it's needed, but not necessarily needed forever. The issue is that while most of our newsrooms are trying to become digital first, we don't necessarily have it all the way there yet. One of the types of organizations I work with frequently are those where they're having trouble making that transition, trying to get their stuff on the internet, trying to get a strategy for how they put things on the internet, even trying to figure out the schedule for putting things on the internet. A lot of news organizations, you know, when you get outside of the top couple few, don't necessarily have that in place. And you mentioned, or we were talking about the New York Times Innovation Report, and, you know, reading that, it's clear that even there, they don't necessarily have it figured out. And if the New York Times doesn't have their digital strategy completely figured out, we really can't expect any other newsroom to be at the point where they can just merge whatever they'd like newsroom role-wise. The main thing is that we need to adapt our newsrooms and our strategies and all of those things. We can't just bolt on the print strategy.
I've looked at, and Amber's looked at the New York Times report, digital report that came out about a week or so ago, and they sort of admitted some of the problems that they were having moving their newsroom into a digital direction. A lot of the things that other newsrooms have been sort of talking about and dealing with over the last, 5 or 10 years, the New York Times took a real serious look at what they were accomplishing, where they were successful and where they weren't successful in moving these things. You said that, if the New York Times can't figure it out, a lot of other rooms in newsrooms may not be able to figure out it as well. The New York Times is sort of I don't want to say a special case, but, they're a big newsroom, big legacy newsroom, and they've got a lot to turn around in order for them to go in the digital direction. So, I think there are probably a lot of smaller news outlets, startups that are probably already, much further along than what New York Times is, and I think they even admit that in the report. They name a few like Vox, et cetera, that are sort of going in that direction. But you're talking about that there are people who, aren't even that far along that just need to, just basic skills to come up with a strategy to move in a digital direction.
Yeah, the New York Times is definitely a unique case because they have a lot of legacy issues. And on the other side of it, we have, as you mentioned, newsrooms like Vox, where because they started from scratch, they have been building it all digitally focused and thinking about those skills and building them into the structure of their organization. But the vast majority of journalism organizations sit somewhere in between. You have everything from small local newspapers to business media, papers or magazines. And these places, they need someone to lead the thinking and the strategy for their digital efforts. And the New York Times, in their report, suggested building a newsroom strategy team. And while part of their issues come from legacy, those legacy issues still face smaller organizations because the type of people who are in the leadership at the New York Times, the editorial newsroom leadership, that is, are the same type of people who are in editorial newsroom leadership positions pretty much everywhere else in journalism, right? I mean, the exceptions being, you know, Vox and those up-and-comers, they still don't have that concept down.
You know, if a news site is, from its conception, is going digital, it's going in that direction, then yes, their thinking is going to be much further on, and the challenges they face are going to be very different than a legacy news site. So what would you see then as the, you know, I don't know, say ideal, but, you know, where should newsrooms be at this moment in sort of how they plan for digital?
I mean, they have to plan to be digital first. They have to plan to make promotion an essential part of every step of their journalistic process, because otherwise they won't get the traffic to maintain their commercial side's needs, right? I think that it's about, when I work with organizations that are looking to build a digital strategy, the most common issue I come across isn't that they don't want to adapt, right? They want to adapt. They understand that the internet has op tools, but the problem is they don't even know where to start asking the right questions to get those tools and to get their practice in line with all of the opportunity that's out there. I have a sheet that I do, 50 web tools that are free for journalists in 50 minutes, right? And any one of those tools are able to greatly increase the effect and the digital attraction of a piece of reporting. And most journalists don't know any of them, right? And so it leaves them in a situation where they don't have the thinking about what they can do to make their story better online, because they don't even know where the opportunity lies, right? And it's changing slowly, because you can look out there and see what the New York Times is doing or see what Vox is doing. But there's an issue where if you don't have someone to lead digital in the newsroom, you look at, a great example would be, of course, the Atlantic Business blog. They have graphs in almost every story, right? And if you come into a newsroom where nobody really understands digital, they'll look at that and say, man, it's cool that Quartz has graphs and all their stories, but we don't have a dedicated infographics person, so we'll never be able to do that. But of course, Quartz's chart builder tool is an open source tool. Anyone can use it, and it's really easy to install and adapt and use in like 10 to 15 minutes of training sitting down with a bunch of editors or a bunch of journalists. But if you don't know how easy it is to implement that code or even know about the existence of that tool, then you're never going to get that opportunity. And that's why it's so important to have someone in most organizations that is standing up as a digital editor, because they can sit in on editorial meetings and make suggestions, because when your journalist in your organization comes to you and says, man, it's so cool that Quartz is doing charts, I wish we could do charts, you can say, yeah, we can do charts, right? And also because there's a tendency in newsrooms, perhaps more than any other organization, to be very siloed and to be very hierarchical and to be very protective of that hierarchy. And having someone who can sit outside of that and be able to say, you know, yes, we can do that. Yes, we can get more readers by making ourselves better journalists. Yes, we can launch new platforms and do new tools and create new concepts. You know, that is an extremely important role to modernizing any journalism organization.
I think the word I get hung up on, and this, that was in our conversation on Facebook, is the word outside. Sort of what you describe, though, you talk about somebody who's outside those silos, but in actuality, you're really kind of meaning, sorry to interpret words for you, that somebody who's really kind of involved in the team, but who has a digital focus.
Yeah, I mean, they are involved in the team. When I say outside, it's not so much that I mean that they're sitting, outside of the entire organization. It's that they're sitting outside of the silo structure that comes with beats or verticals that are often how newspapers organize themselves. And they're sitting outside of, hopefully, if the position is set up correctly, they're sitting outside of the editorial hierarchy. In the sense that they can get involved in any project at any level and not threaten those journalists who have been doing, their traditional print stuff for a long time, and they want to get involved, but they are worried. With all the volatility in the jobs of the journalism industry now, it's very easy to feel threatened when it's someone's approaching you and saying, here's something new that we should be doing that you don't know how to do yet. And it's much easier to work in organizations and to say that when those people who you are saying it to don't feel that you are somehow threatening their job.
Yeah.
By coming in and saying that.
Yeah.
And that's what I mean when I say outside.
Yeah. I just, and that was a misunderstanding of my point on Facebook. But because I've seen, newsrooms where you bring in a digital team that's separate from the print newsroom. And so, it's human nature. What you end up having is you end up having two competing teams that aren't necessarily working together. And I think the what we need to be looking forward to, or looking in our forward-looking approach to the way newsrooms are now, is the digital and quote-unquote print need to be looking in the same direction. They need to be working together and pulling in the strengths that they each bring to the table, the reporting strengths, the digital strengths, the development and design. And so that having teams that are separate, we've seen that in the past, places like the WashingtonPost.com, where you ended up having a completely different digital staff. And, and that crashed and burned because there was no buy-in from the print side of it. And there needs to be buy-in because this is the direction that journalism is going. It's us producing content for where our readers are, and a lot of our readers are on digital. So, maybe you can write a story for the print side of your business, but you have to understand that it's going to go digital. You need to understand the strategies in digital and what the strengths and the weaknesses of it are in order for it to succeed there and to make your news outlet to succeed there.
Yeah, I don't think it makes sense to have separate teams. I think it does make sense to have one or a few, depending on your organization size, separate individuals who can act as touchstones, trainers, and advocates within those organizations, right? There are a lot of organizations that may have, internal evangelists or something along that side. And that's really what newsrooms need. Is they need to pull in people to be excited about digital, to lead an integration within the newsroom. And being excited about digital and thinking about all of the opportunities that are involved in it and acting on those opportunities, that for an individual person is really a full-time job. And it shouldn't necessarily have to be merged with some of the other roles that people who are normally given editor titles are involved with. When we were talking on Facebook, one of the things I linked you to was a whole document that was all of the workshops and sessions in a recent college media conference in New York City. And in that document, there was still a very small number of sessions and workshops about digital, relatively speaking to the entire conference. And the reason I link that is because I think, there's this temptation to think, millennials are going to come into the newsrooms and they're all going to be totally knowledgeable about everything to do with digital journalism and ready to lead those newsrooms up and out of this time where we're too devoted to print. But the reality of the situation is that the majority of young journalists who are coming into our profession are still lacking perhaps the excitement, almost certainly some of the skills, and absolutely the strategy that comes with long-term digital newsroom thinking. And so there still needs to be someone to do all of that, to lead in that. Eventually, that is the type of position that will lead to its own extinction in a good way, right? The most successful digital editor is one who is looking to eliminate himself out of the hierarchy, because total success means that you don't need a different individual anymore. But I don't think we're even close to that time yet.
No, and I think it's there have been a lot of news outlets that were thinking that, oh, well, you know, we'll get these millennials that are coming out of J school and they're going to have all these skill sets and they're going to be able to pull our newsroom forward. And the sad truth is as much as legacy newsrooms have been dragging their feet, you know, journalism schools have been dragging their feet. Communication schools have been dragging their feet about sort of adopting a digital first outlook in their instruction. You know, in my own professional experience in running into young journalists, either as interns or people looking for jobs, they come out and they feel like, well, man, I've just spent thousands of dollars getting this degree, and it has not prepared me for what this market is right now. And that's kind of a sad commentary. And a lot of them are really interested in becoming journalists and telling the stories that we do. And some of them have interest in online stuff, but that they haven't been taught the skills. And, you know, I can't tell you how many people we've had on the podcast who have said that, you know, yeah, well, I didn't know how to do this. I had to go out and learn it myself. That they had to go to, you know, massive online or open online courses, or they've had to go, you know, figure out how to break down data sets themselves or learn InDesign or things like that in order for them to tell stories.
And I think it kind of the question that I was thinking here is, you know, how do you start? Like, we all know that this is the mountain that we have to climb as people who are in news. This is clearly where we're going, where we should be going, the path that we should be on right now. What's the first step? How do you start this? Like, do you start, you know, get a Facebook page, start a Twitter account? You know, is that simple enough to start, or do you need to do something else?
Well, I just talked to an
intern. Not those skills, or how do we as representatives of the journalism establishment start training people in these skills regardless of what's coming out of J schools?
Probably a little bit of both.
Yeah, a little bit of both. Like, if I'm in a newsroom, you know, we want to go digital first.
Well,
how do I start their transition?
Well, let me say this before we start. I think that that new journalist has to be receptive. They have to understand that maybe they did get shortchanged, that they didn't get all the stuff that they needed to know. So they're going to have to put in that extra effort. At the same time, that there are people in newsrooms now who have been in had jobs for a long time, they need to understand that they need to pick up new skills as well.
Mm-hmm.
So where do those skills come from? Where does that instruction come from? What do you think?
I mean, there's a lot of opportunity out there to pick up those skills. And depending on location, it can be easier than others. When I lived in D.C., now that I live in New York, there's all sorts of events around, like meetup.com, where you can find the Online News Association or the Society for Professional Journalists and get organizational training there. But I think that the great thing about the internet is that it is all out there for someone who wants to take it. And it means two things. If you really want to start picking it up and you want to be the person to lead the newsroom, it's really about starting in the same place, which is you have to lead by example. Even if you don't know anything, you have to start with, you know, give yourself a blog, give yourself a Twitter account, give yourself a Facebook account, and then start experimenting on it and keeping track of what you're doing in those experiments. And a good thing about doing those experiments publicly on Twitter and on Facebook and on your personal blog is that inevitably other people will get involved and make suggestions and take ideas. The only way to really learn digital journalism, in my mind, is to just start doing digital journalism and do it terribly initially and then get better. And if you are in college, then you have a lot more opportunity to do that terrible journalism in a more formal situation. And if you are not, then it means, you know, have your personal blog and start doing your terrible journalism there so that you can get to the good journalism in your professional setting. The first thing that I usually advise people to start with, and it's usually what is often neglected in either the newsroom or in the college setting, is to look at and understand search engine optimization. There's a tendency for journalists to look at SEO and think, ah, this is a dirty word for a dirty thing that marketers do that I shouldn't ever touch, lest I make myself, a terrible, unethical journalist. But the truth of the matter is that search engine optimization, when it's not being done by some, you know, sketchy organization, when you are trying to understand it, the best way to think about it is essentially the writing style for the internet. In the same way that we have the AP style for what we write in the news and for our overall structure of writing, SEO techniques are about understanding how to structure writing and how to build that writing and everything that comes around it in the digital arena on the internet, right? And so when I go in and I do SEO training with students or in newsrooms, the immediate thought that people have is, oh, this is going to be some boring thing which is terrible about links or images or something that we don't care about as journalists. But what I always start off saying is that SEO is about how to write so that you can be read. For AP style, it's how to write so that anyone can pick it up and read it. For SEO, it's about how to write so that you are able to be found using the majority tools on the internet and so that what is found is relevant to the people who are searching. The best example of that is in newsrooms we have a tendency to go with sort of fun pun-based titles that are, you know, amusing to do and a lot of fun to write and work perhaps well in print. But those titles don't work on the internet. And it's not because I am the eliminator of fun and I'm telling you that you need to write boring titles. It's because if you write a title that's a pun and someone's searching, they'll never be able to find it. And your awesome article that is totally relevant to their search is not going to show up. And so that's where I like to start people off.
You said a couple of things there that just seem so obvious. I mean, not dismissively. I don't know if you dismissive what you said, but people don't even think about that. The prejudices they have against SEO. I mean, it's like every reporter understands that if you turn in a story, you probably should turn in a headline as well.
Or ideas but, for.
Yeah, and it's the same sort of thing. Would you publish a story without a headline? A headline's there. It's not your story, but it's there to sell your story,
right?
And to get people's attention. So it's the same sort of deal. You know, why have these prejudices against all these other things that are actually trying to help you deliver your story and reach your readers?
Right. And the really nice thing about training and learning search engine optimization is it's basically like your welcome mat for getting a better understanding of HTML, which is sort of the base underlying language of everything we do on the internet. I mean, you can go far deeper and talk about PHP or Python or all sorts of different programming languages, but in the end, everything that they're producing boils down on the web to HTML. You know, HTML is our paper for the internet. Everything goes in it and on it. And understanding that is step one towards understanding all the vaster digital strategies involved. A great example of that is images and alt tags, which is one of the things I cover in my SEO training that I run, which is, you know, people will say, why do we need to put this text that no one can see in an image in an alt tag? So the image alt tag allows Google to find your image, which is great. And that's good to have, and it allows people to find your article through that image. But in addition to that, it also allows people to mouse over the image and get additional information about it, something that digital native producers have been using to interesting effects for a long time. A great example of that is xkcd.com, a webcomic where you get a whole nother dimension of that comic by mousing over it and seeing the content of the alt tag. And it's also important because as we go mobile and we have people encountering our sites with low bandwidth devices, so their internet is slow, they can see the text of the alt tag often before the image loads. And it's even more important because as we write, we should be aware that there are people who interact with the internet from being disabled. And the alt tags are super important for allowing blind people to be able to understand what is going on in that image. And so there's all sorts of underlying elements there that come out of what is an image tag in HTML and how does it work and how does it affect the loading of the page and how do computers read it, right? All just understanding the image tag and that alt element within it. And from there you can look at, well, titles have, links have title tags. And you can look at HTML5 and how the structure of HTML5 tells us about what's on the page. And then from there you can look at how does the structure of HTML5 and the classes we use is microformat metadata to understand your page as machines. And then we can talk about how Open Graph data allows social platforms like Facebook to understand what image is your image for that story and what the description is and what the title is. All of these things are hugely important for making a digital effort successful, but they're also really important because it means that readers can find, understand, and better read your story on the internet. And so when I start people off, I'd say the place to start off is how can I make what I create as a writer or a journalist more effectively understood on the internet? And that's your gateway into the whole wide world of effective digital journalism, right? And from there, the next step is start looking at platforms because, you know, we have been doing print journalism for centuries, and we figured out the best way to put, you know, printed words on a page a long time ago, and now we don't have to think about it anymore. But we haven't figured out the best way to put words on the internet yet. And understanding the opportunities there and the platforms for it means that you can get a better sense of what those opportunities are and how we can change and build on them. A great example of that is just being an early adopter. Every time you see a new technology that relates to consuming writing on the internet or consuming content on the internet, you should try it out. You know, it doesn't matter if you can get it to work well or not. It doesn't matter if it's the most awesome thing you used or boring as anything. Just trying it out can give you a better understanding of what it is and what it does and what the opportunities of the internet are. And then you take that to your newsroom, and perhaps, hopefully, there would be someone there like a developer or a digital editor or a programmer that you can then go to and say, look at this cool thing that they're doing. What can we do to do something like that? And, you know, having worked as a web developer and continuing to work as a web developer, I can tell you that no developer looks at an interesting challenge and says, gee, let's not do that. Their response is going to be, let's figure out how we can do that and make it even better, you know?
Yeah, no, speaking of my own personal experience as a journalist and who worked his way into digital journalism, for example, you know, I think you can sort of sum up what you said is you need to be a user to understand the advantages of the digital technology brings to journalism. It was a hugely eye-opening experience when I started using Twitter. I was dismissive like a lot of people are. Man, I don't want to post pictures of my lunch. but that's what I do now. But as soon as I began to understand how Twitter could be used to not only promote my own work, but to follow sources and follow breaking news and interact with readers, and I saw the strength of it, then I said to myself, well, how can I incorporate this in into the work that I do? How can I use it to make my content reach more people? And then once it reaches those people, you know, interact with them to grow the story and grow news stories out of it. So, you know, just adapt, grabbing things that are new and different to you and using them is just hugely powerful.
Yeah, and I think you've hit upon one of the major obstacles that a lot of journalists who are interested in being better at digital but don't know where to start face, which is that there's this sense that they somebody comes into the newsroom with a fully formed knowledge of every platform that you could potentially use. And to acquire that knowledge is a significant challenge that was only taken on by someone who already had all these skills. But the truth of the matter is that most digital journalists and digital editors who are out there did not magically, you know, have a whole preset of skills that allow them to acquire that. They just went out there and they tried it. And they kept trying it, and they kept trying different things. You know, almost every person who has moved, that I know of, who has moved from, you know, traditional journalism to digital journalism, did so through experimentation and, like I said, trying and failing. I mean, I'd say probably the majority of the work that I do as a digital journalist or as a strategist is dealing with WordPress and building things in WordPress. And in 2007, I knew nothing about WordPress. None of the tools out there that we already had in place were doing what I wanted to do. And so I said, okay, I'll start building a WordPress website, and I'll figure it out from there. And it's basically been one long figuring it out from there since then for me professionally. And all of that stuff has come out of just being willing to experiment and try and fail and try again. And sort of losing the fear of failure is a big way to help yourself out in becoming a digital journalist. And the best way to do that is to just do stuff and break it or don't break it and figure out where to go from there. I mean, there's just so much interesting stuff and interesting tools for it that it's almost you're missing out on something that's fun by not trying at all. The thing about, like, computer science people, our programmers, our web developers, our IT folks, they did a study a while back, and they found out that a CS degree, a computer science four-year undergraduate degree, at the end of the 4 years, the first 2 years of that degree were completely irrelevant because technology had moved on from whatever you were doing in those first 2 years. And so the people with necessarily programming, though they learn programming, that's not what it's about. It's about learning how to think like the computer thinks and learning how to think like a programmer is something that can massively help journalists. There's a great series of books that are open source for training yourself in code. And they're called How to Think Like a Computer Scientist. And the reason that they're titled that is because once you understand sort of the basic structures that underlie everything that goes on the internet, there's so much you can do because you understand that at that basic level, it's really quite simple. And it's sort of, it's an easy thing to say, everything's so simple because I already know it already. But a great example of that is, and I'm going to use WordPress again because it's 22% of the internet at this point, so it's a good thing to know if you don't already know it, that everything in WordPress is built on the most simple programming structure possible, the while loop, right, which is just while X is happening, do Y. And almost everything you see on the front page of any site produced by WordPress is just running some version of that operation. And in fact, most of programming is built around that type of operation. And so understanding that even if you are not prepared to build out those, you know, a WordPress theme yourself or a plugin yourself, understanding the concept unlocks a whole sense of what the opportunity is online. Because once you understand that that's your basic unit and how simple that can be to apply and build together to create even the most complex stuff, then then you can start asking the right questions, which is the hardest part to get to when trying to bring digital into a newsroom.
Yeah, and I think that you touched on that. You said the word fear a couple of times. I think that is a big thing for a lot of people to just overcome, and to really they need to understand that really not everybody knows everything. And something else that you said that the people who are succeeding in digital journalism now tried things and failed. And continued on, and that's sort of the way you succeed and the way things move forward. I mean, it's what newsrooms need to do. It's what each and every journalist should be doing themselves. They need to look and say, what can I do? What can I teach myself? How can I make myself more accessible to this type of journalism?
It sounds like there's something to be said for, you know, the willingness and the enthusiasm to say, you know what? Yeah, I'm going to try this. I don't know what I'm doing, but I'm going to dive in. I'm going to see what's there. I'm going to see what I can do with it. And I'm going to learn from that. And then maybe other people will think it's cool and want to try with me.
Yeah. I mean, here's the really great and uplifting thing when you're thinking about digital journalism is that with the exception of the programmers and developers themselves, journalists are really the profession most prepared to do that. Because being a good journalist is centered around one thing, which is being able to really do research and investigate, right? And being good at digital journalism means doing the research about what it is that's out there and investigating how to do it. And that can be asking other people the same way that you would interview folks for an article. It can be, you know, doing the in-depth research of reading through a Wikipedia article and all of the attached articles and the academic studies on a particular programming methodology. And those same skills that make good journalists are the exact same skills that make good digital people. And I don't mean just good digital journalists. I mean good inhabitants of the internet space for building things, because no programmer is going to come out knowing the programming language that they are likely to use for the majority of the rest of their life. It's all about going out there, finding it, doing research, doing the reading. And one of the things I try and get journalists to do is I say, take those same skills that you apply to building good articles, take those skills and apply them to digital techniques. And you'll discover that the things that make you a good journalist are the things that can make you a good digital journalist, right? And that's all about just going out there and finding it out and seeing what's there and talking to people and getting advice. I mean, one of the things I do more than anything else is look at what other people are doing. I go on GitHub, I follow all the people who I think are important and who I think are doing good things, and I see what they're doing and I see the code that they're doing, and I use it because one of the things about programming is you're always looking at other people's bits of code and repurposing it. And so I look at what they're doing and I use those code bits and those pieces and their techniques as starting points to learning what else I can do and what else I need to be learning. And then sometimes, if I really can't figure it out, it's the same skills as with journalism. You go out there and you find the person and you find their contact information or you find them on Twitter and you ask questions. You know, most programmers are very, if they're doing open source code, they're very, very happy to talk about what it is they're doing and excited to do so usually. And that's a great way to pick stuff up as well.
Well, this has been pretty fascinating. I think we're going to sort of wrap it up there. How can people find out more about you, about the work that you do?
So the best way to do it is I have a blog called HackText, and that's at http://hacktext.com. And I talk a lot about what I do there and some of the projects that I'm working on and that type of thing. Though even more than that, probably the best thing to do would be to follow me on Twitter, where my username is Chronotope. That's Chronotope.
And you spend a lot of time on Facebook, too.
Yes, I spend a lot of time on Facebook. That one's easy to find me. There aren't many Zuckerscharves, and there aren't many Arums out there. Finding me on Facebook is probably pretty easy. And, of course, doing a Google search would probably also be pretty easy.
Yeah, I feel bad about asking people because really it comes down to if you just Google people, you can find out pretty much anything you want, almost.
Yeah, especially for someone with as unique a name as mine. In fact, on my business cards, it's just a link to the Google search for my name because I think that that's the most effective way to find me and find out what I'm doing and what it is that people are excited about that I'm doing, because that'll often show up if someone's written an article about a plugin I've written or a project I'm working on.
So you're saying that your name has good SEO?
My name does have good SEO. I think that it's very important to practice what you preach.
There you go.
So we should all change our name to something that has good SEO. Well, thank you very much. Yeah,
and it's really great talking to you guys. Is there anything else that you have questions over before we wrap up?
Well, we touched briefly on the New York Times thing. Do you want to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, sure. I'd love to. I actually was just finishing up I've been reading all the reports on the report.
Yeah, that's just as fascinating.
I haven't really done a detailed reading of the report myself until recently.
Yeah, the exact same thing. I was reading all the reports about the reports and I actually sat down last night and started reading the report itself. It's a pretty significant document, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I'm reading it and it's very significant for the New York Times. I think, though, in some ways it's almost a little frightening that they're producing this document now, because it indicates that they've had such a buffer for their operation in terms of being the paper of record in print, that they have been able to ignore significant changes in the digital world for probably a very long time.
No, that was I think the first round of articles about when it came out, that was kind of the tenor of them. There was just a massive shock of like they're saying all these things, and yes, they're important and true, but these are the conversations we were having 5 years ago. Why are they suddenly? Yeah, it's really important to engage your readers. It's really important to encourage your staff to use social media.
And the fact that they are having those conversations now, and they're the New York Times, and this is sort of tying back to what I said earlier, tells us that so many other newsrooms are either still just having these conversations now, or perhaps haven't even had those conversations yet.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, especially when it comes, a great example of that is reader engagement, because newsrooms do so terribly at it, because they are built around the concept of we print it and you read it.
Right.
And the idea that interaction is important is so alien to many of these newsrooms that trying to change the conversation is difficult for many, many people.
Yeah, no, they don't realize that digital technology has freed the reader, that the reader has all the control now, and they can they're going to give you the amount of attention that they feel that you deserve if you can't come to them. If you don't come to them in their terms, they're just going to move on and find out what they're looking elsewhere. Mm-hmm. One of the things that I kept noticing through the report is, you know, they're very self-congratulatory and, you know, very vain, I guess, just to be mean, about who they are and the quality of their journalism.
The first sentence. We're still winning at journalism.
We're still winning at journalism. Well, but journalism is this. Journalism now is how you bring your content to your readers, and you're actually failing at that. And they admit that they're failing at that. And it's good that they recognize it. It would have been nice that they recognized it before. One of the things that I've been frustrated with over the last 5 years is that how many people were looking to the New York Times to be sort of a beacon and to show them the direction to go, and they just seem to be so much far behind everybody else. And now we have a document that sort of confirms that, mm-hmm. which is mm-hmm. like, you know, kind of frustrating and kind of sad in a way. They definitely have challenges. They need to turn that ship around. It's good that they recognize that. But I think it's what you said. I mean, they had their print readership still paying for so much of their content. They didn't have to make a lot of these decisions that other newspapers who were really, really been struggling in the last 10 years have had to make. And you know, good on them. They're great journalists. They produce great content. But man, you know, turn the ship around and let's. You are a leader in our industry. You know, get on board with what's going on, and help us solve this problem.
Yeah, and I mean, here's the thing that I thought was sort of missing from the report, and I think it reflects an overall issue in our industry, which is there's a tendency among journalists to look at the industry of journalism and say, thinking about how we fund our journalism is something that other people do.
Yeah.
And those people over in the sales section and the business section that we should never think about or touch or interact with, lest it somehow influence us. But the truth of the matter is that, you know, Andrew Sullivan's a great example of this, right? He understood that his journalism had worth, and that worth was equal to a money value, and that he could build a business around that money value. And thus, his site with its subscription model was born. And this report was frightening also in that it was a lot about how do we catch up with our digital-first and digital-born competitors, and very little about, you know, we're just assuming that everybody who is Vox or, you know, BuzzFeed is massive money makers, that just by imitating their practices, we can somehow continue to make money at the rate that we make money. And I don't think that's the case.
No, I think what the lessons that all these other newspapers that have closed, newspapers that are struggling on, when the ad revenue dried up in their print and they had to really make hard decisions about the sizes of their staff and the direction of their business and finding new ways to monetize themselves. I mean, the Times has been pretty separated from having to make those sort of decisions. And you can see it in just as you look at their front page. Their front page is a print front page on their website. And the reason that they haven't had to make a change is because they've never needed to make a change, because their concept and their direction has always been print first. Well, now they're going to have to sit, you know, to change that whole outlook. And, you know, good luck for them to do that.
I mean, and here's the thing, though. There's the temptation to look at Vox and say their quality journalism succeeds because they somehow understand digital better than we do. And they succeed as a business because they somehow understand digital journalism than we do. But the reality of the matter is Vox, and we've seen this in the occurrence of Vox.com, and this was one of the things that was on discussion, the Facebook head of project management recently, his post about how, you know, the news is terrible, right? The issue is that we've seen in Vox, and we can see it in BuzzFeed, they're not making money based solely on their immense digital journalism knowledge. BuzzFeed is a business model in which they make posts about cats to pay for good journalism. And the New York Times is never going to be able to be in that position and survive as a brand. And so then the question becomes, if you are not creating hundreds of posts about cats every day, right, how do you make enough money to sustain an all-digital venture? And that question is essentially unanswered in that report. And let's be frank, it's essentially unanswered anywhere. We don't know the answer to that question. We haven't figured it out yet. And that's something that we really need to look for and look towards. You know, there's all sorts of technology issues involved in that. And this is getting into a much larger topic that probably there's not enough time to discuss. But, you know, there's the issue of advertising technology, what our advertisers expect, advertising servers, and all of those things that influence how our business makes money, that we are dependent on their methodologies and their technology. And those methods for making money in the news business are, in my mind, fundamentally broken. And we haven't figured out the next way, unless it's making a lot of posts about cats.
Well, I'm sure there would be quality journalistic presentations of cats by the New York Times. I would like to read that story. It would be really interesting. But yeah, it's maddening that this disruption has been occurring for at least 10 years, if not longer. And the greatest minds in journalism have been pondering this, and we've yet to crack the code on this. It's frustrating sometimes.
A lot of what marketing people and a lot of what ad set people and a lot of what BuzzFeed is doing, because BuzzFeed's decisions about what content they publish, you know, those decisions come from as much a marketing mind as a journalism mind, because we need to be able to market our own content on the internet, right? Those decisions are sort of hitting very base areas in our brain. You know, why do all those pictures of cats and posts succeed where our detailed reporting about Uganda fails in web traffic? Right. And the answer is because people love cats, because they trigger something about how they, you know, there's studies about how they look like babies, and we want to defend babies. And so therefore we love cats because we love perpetuating the human race. Right. And that type of thinking will never be able to be applied respectively to a post about Uganda or to a post about serious issues in the world around us. And the flip side of that is, but as journalist organizations, we have a responsibility to produce content that covers those issues and to inform the populace, because that's how change occurs, and that's how we fix the world around us. And saying somebody else has the responsibility to make money as a journalist, for you to say that gives up an essential part of that responsibility. Because if you can't think about how your journalism is going to survive, because make no mistake, you know, if you want to work as a journalist, you need to eat. And if you want to eat, you need to get paid. And therefore, you need to think about how your journalism makes money and how the journalism industry makes money and how to fix some of the essential problems of how content is produced and distributed on the web and how we make money off of that.
Yeah, I think that's the conundrum that the New York Times is going to have to face. And they touch on it a little bit about the quality of their journalism. I mean, it takes money to produce that quality. And, you know, with the advertising, print advertising drying up, you know, where's the scale that the New York Times will be able to produce that same quality and pay their reporters and compete? I mean, you know, yeah, you're very right. You know, a Uganda story is probably not going to have the same clicks as a cat video, just because that's just human nature. And so, you know, how can we, you know, make that jump that gap and create quality journalism in that space?
Yeah, I mean, that's, if you look at the, and because it's just so much fun to look at the innovation report that the New York Times produced, on page 25 of the report, or page 26 if you're looking at it through a PDF, right, they basically have an infographic that says, our goal is to build loyalist readers. Our current approach is to produce quality journalism.
Oh, that graph.
And in this report, we focus on what else we need to do. And what that says is that the New York Times understands, as should we all, that producing quality journalism is not a business model, sadly. I mean, as much as we would all like to be able to produce quality journalism and just make money off of that, not have to worry about the rest of the organization or advertising or marketing our own content or any of that stuff, the sad truth of the matter is that we need to figure out how else we do it. And that's the thing. This is, you know, in the first quarter of this report by the New York Times, but they do not come to a conclusion about how, what the business model is for producing quality journalism while also surviving as an organization that needs to pay its journalists.
There was, you know, about 12 years ago, 13 years ago, I worked for I was a content editor on what became a .bomb, a website that just disappeared. And about that time, mm-hmm. there was a South Park episode that came on, and it was the Underpants Gnomes. And their business model was very much like a business model of the website that I worked on, that they steal the underwear, they steal the underpants, then something else happens, and then they make money. And
it's that something
it's
else.
It's that something, the most important thing. So they were very directed about yet. Making, but it was a metaphor for what was then the dot-com industry. But it's still an applicable metaphor for where journalism is at this point. We know we need to succeed. We know we need to make money. We know how to make quality journalism. You know, how are we going to, how are we going to jump that gap to make that happen?
And it is a reasonable question to ask. Is the New York Times, as it is currently structured, even able to answer that question in their current organization and current structure to make money as a journalistic organization? And the answer is maybe not. If you look at the New York Times and you look at the competitors' traffic, right, and you look at what everyone is doing and how they're building their sites and how they're trying to make money, there's a legitimate question, which is, looking at those traffic numbers as they drop for the New York Times, and looking at the profitability of some of these other sites, is it possible for the New York Times to exist as a journalistic organization like it does now and sustain itself as a business? And there's serious doubt there. One of the stats, I think, in that report that they quoted was that now that Bezos owns the Washington Post, they could lose $100 million a year and still sustain themselves for 200 years. And I think that's very much the thinking that is sort of going on here, right? Which is, you know, is journalism fundamentally
a losing proposition?
A loss profitability? And if it is, then how do we make it not?
That's funny, because that's that whole argument I was thinking about when you started talking about it. I remembered it as well, but when I read it, I thought of Citizen Kane, because there was a moment in that where he's like, well, yeah, I'm going to lose $1 million this year, I'll lose $1 million next year, but I'll go out of business in 25 years or whatever. I don't know. That certainly doesn't sound like a successful business model. It certainly doesn't sound like a business model that somebody would want to invest in. If you know that you're going to lose $100 million a year.
It's basically a charity in that situation. And I think if we turn journalism into charity, there is certainly the argument for nonprofit newsrooms. That's a whole different thing.
But well, they're nonprofit already.
Right. That's the other thing. If we say journalism is a rich man's charity, then we have some serious conflict of interest issues that we need to face. But the other side of it is that, there's a big problem in how we make this approach, because we think that for all of those decades that journalism was a successful industry, it was a successful money-making industry because of what we were writing and how we were writing it. But the truth of the matter is that there were all these local newspapers, and each newspaper, and even the New York Times as a national newspaper, it was essentially a conglomerate of tiny businesses, right?
Right.
There was the business of advertising and branding. There was the business of job listings, the business of classifieds, the business of coupons, all of these various small businesses that worked as part of newspapers because there wasn't the internet and there wasn't a way to take all those small businesses and combine them into a more efficient national business online. But those tiny businesses were what made these newspapers money when they put them all together. And so now we're facing a universe in which, you know, those tiny businesses that supported journalism are no longer available to us because the internet means that everybody focuses on one thing that they're the best at. And when you're Groupon, you're the best at coupons, and there's no way that the New York Times is going to compete with, you know, the coupon business on coupons, and there's no way that the New York Times is going to compete with the classified business on classifieds. And so there's one thing that the New York Times is good at, it's journalism. So how does that make money when it wasn't ever really making money before? Right. In my mind, there was this larger business, and that's no longer available.
And it's funny that they do admit in the report that the people who are getting more traffic on their articles are actually other news sites that repurpose the New York Times content. So they're making money, but they're not making money for themselves.
Right.
So
driving traffic so, elsewhere.
No, this is we could talk about this for the rest of the weekend.
Easily.
But true. Thank you very much for coming on. This has been great. I really enjoyed talking to you. I'm glad I fumbled into your discussion on Facebook. And there are a lot of interesting topics we touched on. Let's definitely keep in touch. Okay?
Absolutely. It was a great pleasure to talk to you two as well. Okay. And, you know, at some point in the future, I hope we do so again.
Okay. Yeah. No, we'll bring you back in. There's plenty to talk about here. Take care. Mm-hmm. Enjoy the rest of your weekend.
You too. Have a good afternoon.
You've been listening to It's All Journalism, a weekly podcast about the changing state of digital news. Find more info on us and download other episodes at itsalljournalism.com. This podcast is produced in partnership with the Association of Alternative News Media. Thanks for listening.